Let us add to this day in history with Benjamin J. Goldson.
Should I go in now? Just hit that play out. Yes, so it's this day in history, back for its big return. Last year, you might remember, I did a couple of pieces on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, which ended... Oh, that was Hugh, the manager, just poking my sides there, so... Start again. Last time, we ended with the 1973 war, which saw Israel defeat a coalition of various Arab states. This would be the last time Israel faced a united front, with Egyptian President Anwar Sadat and Israeli Prime Minister Menachem Begin signing a peace treaty at the Camp David Accords in 1978. Harry, that's your cue to...
Yeah. Go!
The President of the United States of America, the President of the Arab Republic of Egypt, and the Prime Minister of Israel.
Afternoon, historic documents concluding the Treaty of Peace between the Arab Republic of Egypt and the State of Israel will be signed. First, President Sadat and Prime Minister Begin will sign, and President Carter will witness the agreed minutes recording understandings between the parties regarding certain provisions of the peace treaty. Finally, President Carter, on behalf of the people of the United States of America, will conclude this historic ceremony by signing the Treaty of Peace as a witness to the signatures of President Sadat and Prime Minister Begin.
Today we celebrate a victory, not of a bloody military campaign, but of an inspiring peace campaign. Two leaders who will loom large in the history of nations, President Anwar al-Sadat and Prime Minister Menachem Begin, have conducted this campaign with all the courage, tenacity, brilliance, and inspiration of any generals who have ever led men and machines onto the field of battle. At the end of this campaign, the soil of the two lands is not drenched with young blood. The countrysides of both lands are free from the litter and the carnage of a wasteful war. Mothers in Egypt and Israel are not weeping today for their children fallen in senseless battle. The dedication and determination of these two world statesmen have borne fruit. Peace has come to Israel and to Egypt.
Afterwards, the armed struggle was taken up by various non-state actors, which is your sort of terrorists versus freedom fighters dichotomy. Most notably among them was the Palestinian Liberation Organization, which by this point was based in southern Lebanon, which saw an invasion by Israeli forces in 1982. The Israelis had the support of various Maronite Christian militias, such as the Phalangists, who, with the support of Israel, would conduct massacres of Palestinians housed in the Sabra and Shatila refugee camps.
Lebanon, the most dangerous place on earth. A land torn apart by religious and political differences, for generations engulfed by bitter civil war. Once the pearl of the Middle East, now the violent vortex of regional conflict.
In the 1970s, into the Lebanese countryside came the Palestinian army, determined to destroy Israel. From Lebanon, the PLO waged a campaign of terror and destruction against Israel. Israel, in turn, launched counterstrikes, further tearing at the fragile fabric of Lebanon. In 1982, Israel decided to finish the PLO once and for all. This is the story of Israel's invasion of Lebanon, of an attempt to obliterate a dangerous enemy, of the bloody conquest of Beirut, of the innocent civilians caught tragically in the middle, and of the horrible price paid when Israel changed from David to Goliath. Through it all, ABC News was there. Watch now the original ABC News broadcasts of a great TV news story. Israel versus the PLO, the invasion of Lebanon. From ABC News, great TV news stories with Peter Jennings, Sam Donaldson, Barbara Walters, Geraldo Rivera, Frank Reynolds, Richard Threlkeld, Pierre Salinger, John Scali, and the worldwide resources of ABC News.
Tyre is an ancient city that is now the latest battleground for Israel's army in the Lebanon. Today, the deserted streets tell the story of Israeli occupation. In 1982, the Israelis were welcomed by many of the Shiite Muslims who live here. But now those same people are fighting the Israelis in a savage guerrilla war.
25 years ago, an Israeli allied militia group entered two Palestinian refugee camps in the suburbs of Beirut. By the time the militia left, 3 days later, hundreds, perhaps thousands of refugees were dead. The Sabra and Shatila massacres were carried out at the height of Lebanon's civil war by fighters from the Falangist Party. The militiamen from the mainly Maronite Christian group entered the camps, claiming to be looking for members of the Palestinian Liberation Organization. But instead, the fighters started killing civilians using guns, knives and axes. At the same time, the Israeli army surrounded the camps and began shelling them. By the end of the attacks, hundreds of men, women and children were dead. Now, the number is disputed, ranging from 800 people to 2,000. Palestinians who survived Sabra and Shatila are still haunted by its memory. And a quarter of a century on, the terrible events of September 1982 still resonate through Lebanese life, as Zeina Khoury explains.
Although the PLO was defeated in Lebanon, conflict would soon break out in the occupied territories themselves, after an IDF truck collided with a civilian car, resulting in four Palestinian deaths and serving as the catalyst for the First Intifada.
The Israeli-occupied West Bank. The young men here belong to the Army's Premier Artillery Unit, a proud battalion that's normally entrenched high on the Golan Heights of the Israeli front line, confronting 2,000 Syrian tanks. In the 3 months since the Palestinian uprising began in Gaza and then spread here to the West Bank, thousands of soldiers have been drafted in to try and restore order. There are now more troops in the occupied territories than it took to conquer them 20 years ago. For the first time since then, Israel is facing a spontaneous revolt from a united Palestinian population.
Tonight, Israeli soldiers talk about their bad reputation for violence in the occupied territories. Not all of them agree with what they're doing.
On the west bank of the River Jordan is the town of Tulkarim. This, to the Palestinians, is their homeland, which the Israelis have occupied for 20 years. The Israelis insist it's theirs.
This is our country, and they are living in our country, and they are making trouble.
Orders are orders, and we have to do what we are told.
On the slopes around Tulkarim is a Palestinian refugee camp, overpopulated, impoverished, a breeding ground of resentments. The Israelis patrol these narrow streets only when necessary, now especially after a 12-year-old boy was shot dead 2 weeks ago. The boy's father offers his version of the story.
The jeep stopped here where my son was playing with his cousin. They weren't throwing stones, they were playing football. The soldier fired a dum-dum bullet. It hit my son here in the back of the head.
The Israelis say a bullet fired at demonstrators' legs ricocheted off the walls and killed him. Since the outbreak of violence, 72 Palestinians have died in clashes with the army in the occupied territories.
That was the first part of our series on Israel-Palestine. Part two will continue after the break.
Were you at the gig on Friday?
What gig?
The Radical Marist Noise Collective. I never thought seven dudes playing saxophones would change my mind about capitalism, but hello.
That sounds
then
pretty...
2 hours of Nightcore remixes of Every Time We Touch.
What even?
And a white guy did a rap about feelings. So beautiful.
What? What?
Stay in the loop with the 95BFM Entertainment Guide. Online and on air 7 days a week, three times a day. 10:20 a.m., 3 p.m. and 6:20 p.m. It's gigs in that.
You enter the room. Immediately you are aware of the presence of the other. Their being, that they are, is a challenge to you. They see you. In their gaze you see yourself, reflected. As object, you are dominated, or you dominate.
Submit yourself to the Monday 1-4 with Penny. Sounds from now and the shimmering hits from our alternative past. The 1-4 with Penny, every Monday only on 95BFM. There is only this choice.
We now return to this day in history. When we left off, the violence of the First Intifada was winding down, and then afterwards the Israeli government and Palestinian Liberation Organization began secret peace talks, which concluded in a public declaration of peace in the Oslo Accords of 1993.
The PLO has recognized Israel's right to exist. It has never recognized Israel's right to exist since the state was founded in 1948. The PLO renounces terrorism, and it accepts various UN resolutions which call for a negotiated end to their animosity and their state of conflict, and commits itself to the peace process. This does not mean, of course, that all Palestinians commit themselves. And as you saw, if you watched the news over the last 24 hours, both Israelis and Palestinians in the occupied territories have been victims of the violence in only the last 24 hours. But the Israeli government, after saying never, but never, but never would the Palestine Liberation Organization ever be recognized as the legitimate representative of the Palestinian people, recognizes the PLO. And Yasser Arafat, the chairman of the PLO, who Israelis have universally regarded, almost universally regarded, as a terrorist, came to the White House here this morning along with the Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin to sign principles which they hope will govern their future relationship.
I'm going to have some remarks as well and be a co-signer.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Arafat, Chairman of the Executive Council of the Palestine Liberation Organization, His Excellency Yitzhak Rabin, Prime Minister of Israel, the President of the United States.
And the course in the past week is amazing. And there are a few better words to describe this sight, as common a word as it may be. It is an amazing moment.
Today, we bear witness to an extraordinary act in one of history's defining dramas. A drama that began in the time of our ancestors when the word went forth from a sliver of land between the River Jordan and the Mediterranean Sea. As we all know, devotion to that land has also been the source of conflict and bloodshed for too long.
That's the picture. That's the image that will be flashed around the world. That is the picture which will endure. And in just a moment, we will hear from Prime Minister Rabin and Yasser Arafat themselves. We'll be right back. Mr. Arafat and his staff here in Washington have talked about a great deal in the last 24 hours, but they haven't talked any more about anything than they have about the need for money. The World Bank economists estimate that the Palestinians will need $3 billion to start with. Other economists think they'll need $6 billion to create industry and provide housing in the Gaza Strip particularly. And what, if one may guess a little, Mr. Arafat means there is that Palestinian aspirations need to be met. Half the population in the Gaza Strip is under 15 years of age. And much of the violence in the occupied territories, particularly in Gaza Strip, has resulted from frustration, economic and educational deprivation. And if the Palestinians in the former the PLO don't meet those expectations, there's no reason to think that young Palestinians won't turn against Yasser Arafat, just as they have resisted the Israeli occupation.
So as we go off here from the south lawn of the White House, we share with you these live pictures. We want to take you back now to the beginning of the ceremony, the moment that we all awaited, and that was the shaking of a hand between Prime Minister Rabin of Israel and the chairman of the PLO, Yasser Arafat. Yasser Arafat initiating that symbolic gesture, but Rabin, for his part, taking the hand of Yasser Arafat, a man who's been his lifelong enemy.
Although the PLO was now committed to peace, other groups weren't, with a second intifada breaking out again in 2000 after a visit by Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon to Jerusalem.
At a mosque compound in the city, Palestinians threw stones at Israeli riot police, who fired back rubber bullets and live rounds. Four Palestinians were killed, 175 others wounded. 44 police officers, including the Jerusalem chief, were hit by stones. The Palestinian Authority accused Israel of igniting a holy war. Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak says the Palestinians incited the clash.
But first to the Middle East. Israeli tanks and bulldozers have entered the Palestinian-controlled city of Jenin in the northern West Bank. There is said to have been a heavy exchange of gunfire between Israeli troops and Palestinian gunmen. Israeli tanks had previously encircled Jenin in an operation which Israeli forces say was intended to prevent suicide bombers reaching Israel.
Oh, sorry about this. Give me a sec. Although by 2005 the Second Intifada was largely over, Palestinian militants continued to wage a low-intensity war on Israel, which would be the pretext for Israel launching Operation Cast Lead in 2008.
Under attack, Israel's air force unleashes devastation on the Gaza Strip. On the ground in one of the world's most densely populated areas, it's a gruesome scene. The people of Gaza have been bracing themselves for this ever since the six-month ceasefire with Israel expired last week. Emergency medical officials in Gaza estimate that as many as 155 have been killed, but it's just too early to tell.
All day we've heard Israelis firing everything they've got at suspected Hamas positions in Gaza. F-16 fighter jets, attack helicopters, tanks and heavy artillery. And ground forces have been active, engaged in fighting with Hamas in the north of Gaza. They're dug in there tonight around the refugee camp of Jabalia for a second night of fighting.
Israel says its goal is to break Hamas, bring it to its knees, and force it to beg for a ceasefire.
They have also sent in tanks, 150 of them, armored personnel carriers, all the way to the sea south of Gaza City, where they are now holding positions, effectively encircling Gaza City.
The school simply isn't equipped to deal with the number of refugees that are now staying here night after night. This is the only place that they can get clean water. You can see that most of the taps aren't even working.
It has also brought Israeli artillery closer to the civilian population, and there have been a number of incidents with civilian loss of life. A shopping mall in Gaza City was struck, where five people were killed. In the north of Gaza, at least 13 people were killed, and in the south of Gaza, in Rafah, another three. The Israelis militarily have also sustained casualties, one dead and at least 32 soldiers wounded. The other problem for the Israelis is the rocket fire is continuing from Gaza. At least 45 missiles, some of them Grad missiles, some Qassam rockets, were fired from Gaza even while this ground operation was underway. The Israelis are under pressure to bring this to an end internationally, but tonight they seem determined to press on. You can hear above me the whir of Predator drones looking for more targets, and on the horizon we've seen big flashes and the sounds of explosions, the preludes to another night of fighting on the ground. Dominic Waghorn, Sky News, for CBS News on the border with Gaza.
Yes, and fighting would continue until a peace treaty was signed between both sides on this day in history, the 18th of January.